How many of you read or heard on the news this week about the man in California who found the gold nugget? I read that about three times with fascination. He was grading a road on his own property and looked back behind where he was dragging the road, and something caught his eye, and he got off and went back and picked it up, and it was a 7-pound gold nugget. 7 pounds. And he actually found this in January, and he's just now letting it be known, and he spent all this time making sure that his name is not going to be attached to that. You can understand why. With today's gold prices, that's worth about $145,000. But since it's such an extremely large nugget, it won't be melted down, and it'll be put on auction. And there are a number of museums that are bidding on it, and they expect the price to go somewhere around $500,000. So I would think that happiness is finding a 7-pound gold nugget when you're dragging in the dirt. Would that make you happy? For a little while. Somebody shared with me a number of years ago something that stuck in my mind. They said, would you think if somebody walked up to you and handed you $5,000 that that was one of the best friends that you had? And we all said, yes, of course. And he said, you need to think about that a minute. He said, what most people would do is take that $5,000 and go out and buy something that costs $15,000. And as a result of him giving you $5,000, you would end up owing $10,000 more than you had before he gave it to you. Isn't that the truth? Too often it is truth. I'm amazed at myself. How easily I'm sidetracked. And it happens and I don't even know it. My thinking gets messed up. And then I go to the Sermon on the Mount and I get myself pulled back to center. Somebody said you can't preach very long without preaching on the Sermon on the Mount, so it's time at least for me to preach a few lessons on the Sermon on the Mount for me. And I hope you benefit some from it. I just need it in my own life. This Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, was delivered in one lesson. It was revolutionary. And one of the things that strikes me is that God wants his people to be happy. And he makes provisions for us to be happy. 9 times in verses 3 through 11, he uses a term that at least can be. The word happiness doesn't completely say everything that this word does. But it's in there. The concept is in there. In verse 12, the objective of the Sermon on the Mount is rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Rejoice and be glad. Rejoice and be glad. That's what this sermon is all about. And this is the introduction to that sermon. And the remainder of this lesson teaches us what kind of a lifestyle we must maintain in order to be happy. And we need to understand some of the basic context in order to help us understand this sermon. We're in a time, at the time that Jesus delivers this message, we're in a time of great change. The Old Testament is winding down. It's on its very last leg. Malachi 4:6, and he shall turn, this is the last verse of the Old Testament, he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. The last word in the Old Testament is curse. You come to the New Testament, Jesus stands up and delivers this discourse on the side of the hill, and the first word that comes out of his mouth is blessed. You know, it's difficult for us to comprehend and talk about this kind of happiness. Because it's the kind of happiness that we don't know anything about unless Jesus tells us about it. It's the kind of happiness that the world doesn't offer, that we've never known before. Makarios is the Greek word. kind of happiness that's unaffected by circumstances. In fact, it is neither produced by nor affected by circumstances. Therein lies the real value of it. Because everything about this world is produced by finding a 7-pound gold nugget. That principle. And I'm happy for a little while. And then whenever I've spent it, whenever I have used it, whenever it's gone, or whenever I've gotten accustomed to having it, then my happiness that I got from it, I don't get anymore. I need to find a 14-pound one now, don't I? And I'm not really happy like I thought I would be. This word, happiness or blessedness, is used to describe God in a number of places in the Old and New Testament. And I bring that out, for instance, in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 11, the glorious gospel of our blessed God. 1 Timothy 6:15, blessed our blessed and only ruler, the King of kings and Lord of lords. And I bring that out for my next point. The next point I want you to notice, Christians are made to partake of God's divine nature here and now. And we need to raise our eyes up and our sights up and see that God designed us to, in some ways, participate in and partake of His divine nature. Listen to 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 4. Through these, he's talking about the knowledge of Him. Through these, He's given us the greatest and most precious promises. So that through them, this knowledge of Him, you may participate in the divine nature, having escaped the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. How many of us live in view of the fact, in some realization of the reality, that we participate in God's divine nature? That we become like Him. And that we have an other world reality that in which we live. And it's something that's real in our lives. God intends for us as Christians to know this same inner contentment that He knows. This blessedness, this peacefulness, this inner contentment, this happiness that's a part of His own nature. And we participate in that. We're allowed to participate in that through our faith in Him, when we trust Him, when we realize that He knows what it takes to make us happy. Now, I don't know. I think I know. Everybody thinks they know. If I just had this next step up the ladder, if I just had this problem taken care of, if I could just get around this curve, I could just get over this hill, I would be happy. And you know what? You might be for just a little while, but it doesn't last, does it? I mean, how many of us, you don't have to raise your hand, I don't want you to raise your hand, but how many of us worked our whole life so that we could retire and we just thought, when I retire, I'm just going to be thrilled out of my mind. And we got there, and there is, at least for some, there is a lack of purpose. I mean, we got up every day and we went to work and we had a purpose, and now we don't know what our purpose is anymore. We got enough money to eat and got a house paid for and we got some money in the bank, but so what? Where's our purpose? Where's that happiness that we just knew was going to be there if we ever got there, live long enough to get there? Without faith in God and His Son, Jesus Christ, this happiness cannot be experienced. Matthew's whole purpose is to introduce us to the King. Chapter 1, he gives a genealogy of the King. And chapter 2, the adoration of the King from the wise man. Chapter 3, the announcement of the King from John. Chapter 4, the proving of the King in the wilderness. Chapter 5 through 7, the address of the King. Messages of hope and blessing to a nation that was dying. I don't know. a moment. I don't have the time, but I want to take just a moment for a little aside right here. The United States of America has basked in the sunshine of being a superpower for a long time, for generations. I don't know how much longer that's going to continue. There are signs that other nations are obviously on the rise. In my lifetime, we've never known anything other than being king on the mountain. I mean, all countries use our money as the standard. All the countries that want to be international traders learn our language. And that's just the way it's supposed to be, right? But it's probably not always going to be that way, folks. And if our happiness and our contentment and our sense of purpose in life and our fulfillment comes from being the king of the mountain, then we may have to learn how to live some other way and find some happiness somewhere else. I'm not a prophet, and I love this country just as much as you do. But I'm saying if our happiness is in being on top of the heap and being now the one, quote, superpower in the world, then our happiness may not last a long time. And Jesus came to a nation that was a dying nation. And he said, let me tell you about a new nation. Let me tell you about a new people, a people who live by completely different rules, a people who look somewhere else for their happiness and their contentment and their peace and their security. And he began to deliver this lesson on the mount. And you're going to be shocked at what he says, because there are some paradoxes. There are some things in this that turn my wisdom upside down. Not just the world's wisdom, but my wisdom, my way of thinking too. And one of them is that misery is the key to happiness. Now you stop and think about what he said. He says happiness is being poor in spirit. Happiness is the mourners, the meek, the hungry, the persecuted. You give me a word for it. If you don't like misery, then you give me a word for it. I don't care. I won't argue semantics over you. And so he says, happiness is not found in these things. And you listen to that, and the first thing you think, how is it possible that those who are mourning and those who are poor in spirit and those who are meek and hungry and persecuted, how can they possibly be happy? Jesus, I just don't know about whatever it is you're trying to sell here. Everybody knows that happiness comes from being wealthy and independent and famous and powerful and smart and beautiful and young. Everybody knows that. And as many of those things as you can get together in your life, then you're going to be happy, right? And as you start losing those things, you lose your grip on happiness. But Jesus says the first lesson I want you to learn is the tree of happiness does not grow on this earth. It does not come from what the world has to offer. It cannot come from what the world has to offer. Solomon was wealthy and independent and famous and popular and beautiful and powerful and smart. And he said what? Emptiness. Emptiness. Everything is emptiness. He had everything that this world has to offer. And so there are some paradoxes in this happiness. And let me tell you something. Somebody's lying to you. Either this world or Jesus. And we all determine who it is that's telling the truth and who's lying by the life that we live, by the path that we choose. And then another paradox, you cannot fill a spiritual need with anything physical. You hear me? You cannot fill a spiritual need with anything physical. Luke 12:15, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. You believe that, huh? Not many people do, if you do. It's ridiculous to think that you can fill up the void in your soul by junk manufactured in the world. You know why? Because, listen to me, physical things cannot touch your soul. The world says if you're really miserable in your marriage, go buy a new car. That'll help you. If you're unhappy, go buy some new clothes. Go buy a new house. Take a trip. Make some more money. Luxuries do more to discomfort the soul than they do to bless it. How many of y'all, I should ask, raise your hand if you believe that. Not many people do. Ecclesiastes 5:13, riches are kept for the hurt of their owners. Ecclesiastes 5:13, might be a good one to jot down. Riches are kept for the hurt of their owners. The world promises happiness in products, and that's the best that it has to offer. In fact, that's all it has to offer. Jesus doesn't offer financial prosperity. He says, let a man deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And you'll find happiness. And you don't have to wait till the end of the road to find happiness. You'll find happiness on the way in following me. You'll never find real happiness in what the world offers. Happiness is only available through Jesus Christ and his teachings. And not the philosophies of a dead and dying world. I mean, if we learn anything from history, do we not learn that nations rise and fall? And their philosophies of what it is to be successful obviously do not work. They seem to work for a short period of time, and then they don't anymore. Colossians 3, 1 and 2, if you're then risen with Christ, seek those things that are above. Set your affections on things above, not things on the earth. John 1, 15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Jesus said, you cannot serve God in money. We say, well, I don't know, but I'm going to try. Jesus is going to relate to you in this lesson. We'll look at some in future weeks to come, Lord willing. A completely different set of standards. The world, and I wrote down in my notes, Jesus switched the price tags, but he didn't. The world did. He put them back right. The world takes the things that are really valuable and it makes them cheap. Like a marriage relationship. Like the beauty of a sexual relationship that God designed for marriage. And Satan makes it cheap. And he takes the real joy and the real happiness and contentment that comes in those things. He robs us of those things because he makes them cheap. And we buy it because it's cheap. Because we think it's not going to cost us anything, and we spend the rest of our life trying to make sure it doesn't cost us anything, trying to get away from the consequences of it. And we can't. If what the world says is true, then Jesus is a liar. And if what he says is true, then the world's a liar. Somebody's lying somewhere. And when we try to blend the two systems together, we're only going to get unhappiness. And when we think, and when we've got all of those things that the world says it takes to be happy, we've got our youth, and we've got our education, and we've got money, and we've got success, and we've got looks, and we've got all these things that the world says it takes to be happy. When we've got them, we tell ourselves we're happy. But if you live very long, you realize it's a lie. Even in this world, and for sure, you will in the world to come. What does a man gain? What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? What if you could find a 500-pound gold nugget? Would it make you happy for a little while? There's not enough gold in the world to make a man happy who wants gold. If he were able to get it all, it makes him unhappy because there's no more to get. And the man who wants land, all he wants is the land that joins his. Where does it end? Where is that level of contentment? He's going to tell us in this Sermon on the Mount. Here's a chance to straighten out your thinking in your life. I'm serious. This series of lessons, this lesson that Jesus preached, that we're going to be looking at for the next few weeks, it's your chance to get your life straight. Really. It's amazing how quickly we can get off track, isn't it? And how quickly we can lose sight of the things that are really, really important in life. And Jesus brings us back. And he calls us back. And it starts by surrendering to him and saying, Jesus, I know you know more than I know. I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to bet my life that what you say is real. And so I'm going to surrender my reasoning. Where my reasoning conflicts with yours, and that's in most places, and I'm going to put you on the throne of my life, and I'm going to follow you, and I'm going to listen to what you have to say. I'm going to trust you. That's all he asks. Trust him and come to him and surrender while we stand and sing.